Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Rolling.
Roll, roll, roll 'em, roll 'em, roll 'em. See those wagons rolling. Well, hi there. Welcome to another episode of The Shocking Details. I am Joe, joined as usual by
Vincent Caldoni.
This week, we've got an episode for you about a cryptid. Yep, this particular cryptid was a giant red beast with cloven hooves, bearing what appeared to be a dead rider, a dead human rider, upon its back as it terrorized the old west, southwest of the United States. But wait, this isn't some movie plot. It's not a tall tale.
No.
It's actually real. This happened at the tag end of the 19th century. Mm-hmm. So this truly did happen. Mystery is nearly solved, but not entirely. There's still a big puzzle at the heart of this whole thing. What we're talking about, of course, is the mysterious Red Ghost of Arizona.
Featuring Joe Sweeney from Thinking Sideways Podcast and filmmaker Vincent Caldoni. This is The Shocking Details.
It's spring of 1883. And there are these two women. They're alone with their children on their homestead. And it's just a small adobe house on Eagle Creek in the southeastern corner of the Arizona Territory. And all the men folk from this homestead, they rode out early to check on their sheep, which may have been slaughtered or driven off by the Apaches in the latest of a series of raids. And I should mention that there was a pretty serious war going on between the U.S. and the Apaches. So these women were understandably on edge.
Hell yeah.
And
oh my God.
Yeah, they weren't guys to mess with. And
no, they weren't.
Around 11 a.m., one of the women had left the house to bring water from a nearby spring. A few minutes later, the dog began to bark. The woman who had stayed behind went to the window to see what the fuss was about, and that's when she sees it. She doesn't know what it is, but it makes her blood run cold. She hears the terrified screams of her friend, but she finds herself completely paralyzed, unable to move, collapsing onto the dirt floor before barricading the door and hiding there, just praying for deliverance. Mm-hmm. She would later report that whatever she saw was red, enormous, and ridden by a devil.
Yeah, that would make your blood run cold, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of. So the menfolk didn't return until that night, and they heard the news about this red apparition, so they lit some torches, grabbed their rifles, and they headed out to investigate. Out near the spring, they found the body of the woman who'd left earlier to get water, and she was dead. She'd been trampled by something. In the mud, they found hoof prints, but they were unlike anything that they had ever seen before. They were cloven, about twice the size of a horse's hoof, and the prints matched no farm animal or bison or bear or anything that they had ever seen before. So, and these are the kind of, this is back in the day when people, recognized, animal footprints, by the way. Yeah, everybody knew what everything was. And so, also, they found another clue, some more evidence. They found strange, long red hairs clinging to some of the trees nearby.
So the coroner from Solomonsville gets involved, and he held an inquest, and he was really suspicious of this whole story. He actually suspected the woman had been murdered, possibly by other members of the family. But then there were those odd hoof prints, and he could tell that they were the cause of the woman's death, and he could not explain what could have done that to her if not some massive beast.
Yeah, unless they maybe cast some fake some fake hoofs and a cast iron and then beat her to death with them, you know, and left a,
I guess.
You know, yeah. I don't know. But
yeah. No, he came around, apparently. The coroner came to believe the story.
Well, you know, it wouldn't be that hard to believe if she'd been trampled by cattle or horse or whatever, you know, but when you don't even know what the hell kind of creature has these footprints, I don't
yeah.
know. Yeah, I could see why he was scratching his head.
Yeah, but this wasn't just a one-off.
No, and a couple of days later, a pair of prospectors were panning for gold on Chase Creek, which was a tributary of the Rio San Francisco, several miles northeast of Eagle Creek, where our story began. The men were awakened in the middle of the night. Their tent basically came crashing down on them. They heard this really loud scream and pounding hooves. Yeah, hooves again. They come out of their tent, which was, again, just basically flattened, and they saw this incredibly tall horse racing away off into the brush. Really?
So the miners told this story to some fellow tinners up at a place called Camp Orr, and a party was assembled to go back to the camp. Up and down the banks of the creek, they found huge hoof prints, same type as seen before, and they led away from the camp up a hill on a trail that had been recently broken by some kind of large animal.
Mm-hmm.
They also found a few of those long red hairs in the bushes near the ruined camp.
Mm. So there were more sightings. Many of them have been lost to time, of course, but the local Hispanic and Chicano population dubbed the beast Fantasia Colorado, I believe is how it's pronounced.
Fantasia Colorado, yeah.
Yeah. The beast was sighted in Mexico almost as much as it was on the U.S. side of the border.
Yeah, so this area is, I mean, you can go look up Eagle Creek. It's fairly close to the border.
Yeah. Some of the local Spanish-speaking populations, I'm sure, had accounts of the creature, but unfortunately, those have been lost to time.
Yeah, alas. I was not able to find any of those. I really was hoping I could.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but there were also ridiculous tall tales of the red ghost from this time. People were speculating that some of these tales involved the red ghost being about the size of a house and feasting on grizzly bears, which is interesting. I'd like to meet a creature that could feast on grizzly bears. That would be, I don't want to meet him. I want to see him from a distance.
You could take some video and I'll watch it on YouTube.
Yeah, I don't want to get up close. But
it is funny when you read these, you can really, it doesn't take a lot of mental energy to sort out the BS accounts from the more genuine ones that have that feeling of veracity.
Yeah. So what about our red ghost? Did he turn up again?
Yeah. So he turned up again near the Verde River. This time, a party of five prospectors sighted the beast grazing on a mesa, and they managed to get within shooting distance, and they fired. I guess they missed or they didn't get anything vital because it got out of there at full speed. But as the red ghost sped away, something fell off of its back, and the prospectors discovered, and this was actually put in a newspaper that exists to this day called the Mojave County Miner. Mm. And they described it as a human skull with a few shreds of flesh and hair still clinging to it.
So it appears that this red ghost is a monstrous, huge creature that feeds on corpses or something, or murders.
Or carries perhaps, around corpses with it. I don't know.
Perhaps it murders people, you know, eats their liver and such, and just carries around a few souvenirs with it. You know, I don't know. Pretty heinous creature, you ask me.
Pretty scary. I mean, I don't know. Yeah, it's just weird that they find a skull, like a, yeah.
I don't know, man. So one night, a few days later, after this incident, a party of prospectors, there were a lot of prospectors hanging out in that area.
I think there was kind of a gold rush going on in this
time. Yeah, there was. Yeah. So these guys were awakened to the sound of hooves and screams stampeding through their camp. And at first, that's what they thought was happening, was a stampede, a cattle stampede. But it was over very, very quickly, almost as soon as it started. And no cattle were discovered. Again, strands of red hair were found hanging from the brush nearby. But that was it. Nobody saw it, but they sure as hell heard it. And then the red ghost attacked a few nights later, and this time the monster knocked over two freight wagons, meaning it must have been really big and really strong, because
I don't really know how big these freight wagons were, but if you look up, then they're big.
Yeah, and once again, some strands of red hair were found in the wreckage of the wagons. So whatever this critter was, it was a redhead.
Yeah, so there's this cowboy. He's working for the Anchor J Ranch, which is east of Phoenix, and he witnessed the creature in an abandoned corral one evening, and as was printed in the Mojave Miner, through force of habit, that's a quote, he tried to lasso the beast.
Yeah, what? Seriously?
I don't know. Cowboys, man.
Oh, look, a grizzly bear. Let's lasso it. Sure. Yeah. You betcha. What a great idea. Yeah.
It was much too strong for him, and it broke free in an instant and charged at the stupefied cowboy, knocking him and his horse to the ground. Back at the camp, the cowboy said that he'd gotten a good look at the load on the animal's back, on this creature's back, and he confirmed that it was, and I'm quoting here, had once been a man.
Ooh.
It appears to be some kind of dead body that is riding this monster.
You know, I mean, could you, a dead body, like maybe an undead body, maybe some sort of demonically possessed human corpse that was controlling this huge creature.
Zombie. Yeah, exactly.
It's too bad I wasn't around back in those days hanging with these people so I could speculate like this. That would have been great.
That would have been a lot of fun around the campfire.
So a month after the initial sighting, that was when that woman was trampled to death at the beginning of our story. The red ghost reappears again, this time near the Salt River. This was about 80 miles northwest of Eagle Creek, where it all began. A rancher named Cyrus Hamblin was out looking for some stray cattle, climbed to a ridge to get a better look around the countryside. And he saw across a ravine, kind of below him, he saw a huge red animal moving through the brush. Despite he had some good distance, there was a deep ravine, but still the thing scared him. I mean, because it was just something he'd never seen, and it was really, really big. Made the hairs on his neck rise up. But he was a brave guy. He stayed to get a better look at this thing. And eventually he came to realize what he was looking at. It was a camel. It wasn't some huge house-sized grizzly-eating, you know, creature from the other side. It was just a camel. Mm-hmm. And by the way, there are no native camel populations.
Yeah, this would be a pretty weird thing to see in Arizona.
Yeah, and sitting as typical for camels, it had a huge hump on its back. And in this case, it was topped by what looked like a man, a dead man. So we've had a lot of sightings here, and they seem fairly consistent.
Yeah.
An enormous creature with what appears to be a zombie riding on its back, I would say. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, so Cy Hamblin, everything you read about this, Cy Hamblin was, he had a good reputation. He was not known to tell tall tales or make stuff up. So his story was widely accepted.
Mm.
So that leaves the question for these guys. How in the H-E double hockey sticks did a camel get out to the Arizona desert?
Yeah.
And how did it end up with a dead man for a rider?
I think the first we could talk about European or... They're African sparrows. How many African sparrows would it take to carry a camel across the ocean?
It would take a lot.
But yeah, more than, I mean, yeah, this is amazing though. How the hell did a camel get there? And then how the hell did it wind up with a zombie riding it?
Yeah, exactly. And so actually, despite him having this good reputation and having gotten a good clean look at it and giving a sober account, there were people who thought that Hamblin was just mistaken about what he saw.
Yeah. Okay. I can understand why you'd be reluctant to believe something like this. A camel. Mm-hmm. A camel ridden by a zombie. I don't know, guys. But a few weeks after Hamblin's run-in with the Red Ghost, a rancher who also used to be a pastor as well, his name was Mizzou
Hastings.
I think
he was still preaching at this time.
Oh, was he still preaching? Okay.
I think so. It kind of changed, but yeah.
Yeah, but his name, Hastings. Mizzou. Yeah, I love that name.
It's a great name.
Yeah. He woke up one morning to see the creature grazing near his cabin. He grabs his rifle. It's what you do when you see some weird creature. You know, you grab your rifle and shoot it. He shot from inside his cabin. He used his windowsill to steady the rifle and fired, and he got it. He walks over to this dead creature, and sure enough, it was not a monster, but it was an ordinary camel. A big camel. Camels, by the way, are big. They are really big. Big creatures, bigger than a horse. Nothing too supernatural. There was no dead rider on its back, but so the zombie had obviously gotten off at something. But Mizzou could see that there were scars from leather straps. So this camel had been carrying something around for a long time, long enough to, you know, actually chafe
really
its skin
it.
And really injure it. Poor thing, actually. And at this point, it's been maybe about a decade since the first sighting of the Red Ghost. So, you know, it presumably at some point the corpse had just rotted off the beast, or maybe with all the chafing of the leather straps, maybe they eventually kind of rotted and broke themselves. I don't know, but something caused the zombie on the back to fall off of it at some point, which I'm sure the camel was probably glad for.
To be rid of that.
Yeah.
So the question of the Red Ghost rider remains unsolved. But in subsequent years, pretty solid theory developed about where the camel itself came from. And that in and of itself is a twisted and kind of sad tale.
Yeah, it was the result of a heinous experiment. Well, it wasn't that heinous of an experiment,
it wasn't heinous,
really. It just was incompetently carried out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So let's talk about camels for a second.
Yeah, camels, not the cigarettes, the actual creatures.
The creatures that inspired the cigarette.
Yeah.
One of the explorers of the West, his name was Major George H. Crosman, and he made a formal recommendation in 1836. See, the largest logistic problem presented by Western expansion in this area was the lack of water.
Yeah.
So he said the army should use camels in the American West, probably more in the Southwest than out where we are. It took the suggestion like 19 years to get any traction, but once it did, that began a really sad chapter in U.S. military history.
You know, it did. But, you know, the actual idea is not that outrageous. It's actually a sensible idea. Not, you know, at all. Unfortunately, these guys didn't do a good job of carrying out this thing. It could have actually been a success. But the first problem was that Americans at that time, and probably still today, didn't know anything about camels. Mm-mm. First off, they didn't even know where to go get one, much less how to breed them and transport them. There was a steep learning curve there. But eventually, the Navy brought, from the Middle East, the Navy steamer brought to Texas about 33 camels. And also 6 Arabs and a Turk to serve as camel drivers and tutors to the Army's muleteers. It was for their mule drivers. And so they just thought, okay, we're going to turn mule drivers into camel drivers, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. Which might have been a mistake because mules and camels aren't quite the same.
They're really not. Should we explain what a muleteer is?
Yeah, I guess. Yeah. Why don't you tell us what a muleteer is?
So, back in the day, the muleteers were guys who were responsible for driving mules, which is probably pretty obvious. So they would be not quite the same as like a cavalry that would deal with horses. They're using the mules to get supplies and stuff to the battle, to forts, to whatever they need. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of they're like, you know how like a lot of people, actually probably more people than were in combat, were just driving stuff around in trucks, in like Iraq or Afghanistan.
Oh, yeah.
They're sort of the modern equivalent of muleteers.
Yeah, the logistics people, they never get much play in the movies and such, but logistics are actually probably a bigger part of your average military victory than actual heroism on the part of Bruce Willis or Arnold Schwarzenegger. You know what I'm saying?
It's not terribly cinematic, but if you don't have your MREs and your ammunition
and your fuel to run your vehicles and on and on and on. Yeah.
You're not going to win that war.
Yeah. No.
So that's what the muleteers did back in the day.
Yeah. An important job. But not so great for the mules, I imagine. It's probably hard work for them.
They ran those mules. But we'll talk about that in just a second.
Yeah. Well, another problem was that they recruited 6 Arabs and a Turk. And I think that their assumption was that, well, you know, the guys are Arabs. Of course, they know all there is to know about camels, right? Not necessarily so. You know, believe it or not, you know, most Arabs are not Bedouin who live in the desert and ride camels around. Most of them don't know. Most of them would be no more likely to be experts about camels than you or I would be experts about horses, right? I mean, think about it. You know, we're Americans. We live in the West. So, of course, we know all about horses, right?
Yeah.
No, not really.
No, I don't know much about horses.
Yeah. And so a lot of these guys, they probably, you know, were just asking them, hey, you know, you want to go to America, have a good paying job helping us out with the camels? And these guys would say, oh, yeah, sure. I know everything there is to know about camels. Absolutely. Yeah. And so some of these guys, maybe all of them, didn't really know anything about camels. Mm-hmm. I can't blame them. I mean, we've all padded our resumes to get that one cool job, right?
Hey, yeah.
Yeah. So I'm not blaming these guys for doing what they did.
No, the Army should have done their homework a little better.
Yeah, they should have.
And so these, the Army, they're stubborn. They're not going to let any mistakes like this discourage them. So the generals actually sent the Navy back to the Near East for another shipment of camels. And then they began driving the ones they had out west overland to the Army's Camp Verde, which is about 60 miles northwest of San Antonio. Nearly every horse or mule they crossed paths with bolted in terror at the sight of these camels.
Yeah, I bet.
Yeah, they're large, imposing animals that would be totally alien to them. But this had the effect of making the men, the muleteers, they worked with mules professionally, and they were it just made them really suspicious and skeptical of camels.
Mm-hmm. Were they thinking that the camels were some sort of inhabited by evil spirits, and that's why the other animals were bolting, or they just thought,
just didn't like them? I never heard anything about evil spirits, but like, they just didn't like them.
Yeah, and they certainly didn't immediately respond the way a mule would respond to incentives and such. Yeah.
Yep.
Because they are different creatures with a whole different mindset.
Totally different.
Yeah.
So before we get to that, let's talk about probably my favorite character in the story, Lieutenant Edward F. Beale.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not going to get into his whole life.
Yeah, not the same guy as the Beale treasure guy. There's no confusion here. Different guy. Yeah.
Not separated by 100 years or whatever.
Yeah.
Edward F. Beale was, I don't have time to get into his whole crazy life, but he was one of the Old West's most colorful figures, in my opinion, and a really fascinating one. He had a storied history in the Navy and was, you know, devoted to that. But since he resigned to further westward expansion and exploration. He loved exploring, particularly the desert Southwest. That's a pretty big contrast from being at sea to hiking around the desert.
Well, it's kind of similar, though. You're out in the middle of nowhere. And there's
and he was part of the early Camel Corps, and he became so fond of camels that he even learned to speak some Arabic, thinking they might be homesick for that language.
Probably not, but yeah.
Beale was really fond of this big white camel, which stood 8 feet high at the hump. His name was Saeed. And it was said he gave it more attention than most, you know, frontiersmen types. Pioneers gave their horses, which is actually kind of a good, we'll talk about it. It's actually probably the way you should treat a camel.
You know, they're really kind of special creatures, you know, and you gotta make friends with your camel. You know, you can't just boss them around and expect them to love you. You know, doesn't work that way with a camel.
No. Beale found that he could really move his camel over any type of terrain in the Southwest. He found that 3 camels could carry on their back as much as 6 mules could pull in a wagon, and they could cover ground twice as fast.
Mm-hmm.
What they did, I probably could have written this a little more succinctly. What they did is they did a test where Beale took his camels from, I think, San Antonio, something from Verde, to Los Angeles and back.
Mm-hmm.
And they also sent a team of muleteers to see what the difference would be. Beale had a lot of success. The muleteers found the journey a lot harder.
Yeah. Didn't they have a little incident crossing the Colorado River, I believe?
They're crossing from Arizona into California, and the camels swam it with ease with their burdens on their back.
Yeah.
But a dozen horses and mules were swept away from the other team by the current, and they drowned. They lost those animals and a bunch of their supplies. At the end of the journey, Beale was interested to see how the camels would do in different climates. So he took a dozen camels north from Los Angeles into the Sierra Nevada and reported that they were really adaptable to the high altitudes and the cold weather.
So, you know, in other words, you know, looked at from one perspective, the experiment with camels was highly successful.
Yeah.
You know,
if Beale's in charge of them, I think it's really successful.
It would have been more successful. The creatures are, you know, they're strong, they're sturdy, and, you know, reasonably intelligent. And they were able to do the job as good as any animal out there could do it, if not better.
Sure seemed like it, at least from Beale's expedition.
Yeah, so it appears that the camels were on their way to success in the American Southwest, which is why you see every John Wayne movie, he's riding a camel, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Yeah. The biggest issue with the camels was not camels. It was the men who were in charge of the camels.
Mm-hmm.
And of the entire muleteer corps, I think there were maybe a half a dozen guys who actually made any effort to try to understand the camels at all, which is it. They just assumed, once again, this is just basically a big horse or a big mule. And no, they're different. Yeah, Beale was, of course, one of the guys, and there were some other guys who were not even enlisted. I think they were just foreigners from the Middle East. One of them. I don't know if they were the original Arabs and Turks that they hired, or some other guys that showed up, but.
There was a second wave of guys, and they figured out the first guys weren't super helpful. they went back to the Middle East to get more guys.
Yeah, the first wave of guys, they just wanted a green card, you know. But
yeah, exactly. Well,
yeah, one of these guys who was interested in really working with camels was Haji Ali, who really seemed to love life in the Camel Corps and in the Arizona desert. And he was actually a well-liked, very friendly guy. He got the nickname High Jolly instead of Haji because nobody knew how to say his Arabic name. And so he was just, and because he was jolly. So they just say, hey, hi, Jolly, you know, close enough. Hey. But anyway, you are our animal expert. You know, you work at the zoo. So why don't you tell us a little bit about camels?
So, okay. You know, we should really talk about camels because camels are, they're their own thing. They are just not very closely related to horses or mules or donkeys. And if you spend some time around camels, you'll realize that pretty quickly. So I'm going to pause here real quick and just tell you guys a story about my interactions with a camel, which does not come from my time at the zoo.
Yeah, you used to know a camel, didn't you?
I did. I had a little camel buddy. I used to do these nativity plays at a place in Portland called The Grotto. It's a like a Catholic sanctuary.
I went there many times as a kid. I thought it was cool. Oh, it is beautiful. Yeah.
And so we did these nativity plays, and we had a little nativity set, which included a camel named Frank. Mm. And he was a real camel. He was not like a prop or whatever. And in between shows, I would take Frank around on a little lead and meet the guests and interact with them in character. Frank bonded with me because I have a beard and I'm a man, and they kind of sight in on, you know, if they were raised by a man with a beard, they'll like men with beards.
Yeah.
And so Frank dug me. And so that made me valuable to the cast that I got along with this giant, you know, I don't know, 800-900 pound beast.
You would want to get along with that critter, I would think.
You'd have to be friends.
Yeah.
And Frank was, he was actually a very well-behaved camel. But, you know, the thing is, when they bond with you, it's like a real thing. So when I was talking to guests, if I was standing there too long talking, I'd start getting nudged by Frank. He'd take his cheek and rub it against my cheek. Like, come on, pay attention.
Come on,
to the
dude,
camel.
I'm getting bored here.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway, if Frank wanted to like give you a serious hard nudge, he could knock you off your feet quite easily.
Well, yeah, it wouldn't have taken him nothing. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess I would say, just in my experience, camels, interacting with camels actually kind of remind me of elephants.
Mm-hmm.
Because camels have this vast interior emotional life that, just in my opinion, is probably more closer to something like a human being emotionally than a horse.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I guess that's my opinion. And maybe I'm talking out of school. What I do know is that you cannot break a camel the way you break a horse.
Yeah.
It will fight you with everything that it has and die before it gives in, just out of spite and sadness. And that's assuming it doesn't get angry and kill you first.
Yeah.
Which it can.
So in other words, yeah, you know, like a horse basically will be your slave. A camel will not. He will maybe possibly be your coworker.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Maybe somebody took a horse and crossed it with a cat, you know, and
with
camels. Yeah.
Yeah. I do think that's actually a good thing. I think the relationship between camels and people is more like the relationship between cats and people. Mm-hmm. Although cats don't do much for us other than make us happy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's more of a mutual thing than a domestication.
Yeah.
Right. I'm not sure that camels are a fully domesticated species. They still have a wild animal's mind. Just for example, if you use physical force on a camel like that, like people, especially back then, would do to mules and horses,
yeah,
it's never going to forgive you. It will remember that.
Yeah.
So what you have to do is you have to build this kind of relationship, you know, this trust with, that's what camel riders do. They have this relationship with their animals that's personal. It's based in trust and, you know, mutual affection. It isn't really trained to be ridden so much as it agrees to it.
Yeah.
And if a person is too unkind to his camel, that camel will fear humans, all of them.
Mm.
And it may turn against people, just people in general. That can happen.
Yeah, which is quite possibly what happened in this case with the Red Ghost. Maybe he'd been kind of alienated by his human handlers. Yeah, and so the guys who were actually in charge of these camels were muleteers, of course, and their nickname was Mule Skinners. Yeah, not a very wholesome sounding name, but they used weighted whips to drive their teams, and these whips would literally strip skin from the animals' backs. Obviously, this is very inhumane treatment of any animal, but a mule might tolerate it. A camel will not. Camel will not stand for this.
No.
They just cannot be rendered docile through rough treatment, though. And yeah, good for the camel. You know, why should it? You know, you're going to torture me, so I'm going to be your buddy. No, it doesn't work that way, buddy. It does not work that way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. So the Camel Corps really not realizing this, they were basically kind of at war with themselves. They were just going about this whole wrong way. And the muleteers and cavalrymen who made up the Camel Corps thought, they thought that the camels were essentially foreign and alien and unmanly, and which was, I think, not fair to the camels. Camels, for their part, saw the soldiers mainly as monsters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, which I can understand that. You know, the soldiers are like whipping them and, you know, abusing them. A couple of soldiers were killed by their own camels. A lot of the camels died too, most of them, mm-hmm. which is quite sad. And also another misconception that the men had is they believed that the camels could essentially go forever without water. And so they actually basically ran their camels dry and just killed them through dehydration. that, yeah, camels can go a long time without refreshment, but they do need to top up from time to time.
Yeah, you know? I mean, they are. they need, exactly.
Yeah, so it's sad all the way around. I mean, these guys, it was mostly, I think, ignorance.
You know,
even more than cruelty, but cruelty played a part here too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think the cruelty was really unfortunate, but I think they may have been able to eventually overcome that if it wasn't for how stupid, not stupid, but how ignorant of what a camel does and is.
Mm-hmm.
Then came the Civil War. Major reconstruction of the U.S. military was done as a result of the outbreak of that war, and the Camel Corps was abandoned. Many of the animals were killed, but a number of them escaped or were just let go.
Oh. So, yeah. Why did they kill them? They just figured, like, you know, that's the humane thing to do, or?
I don't know. Yeah, I honestly don't know. No one knows why some were let go, why you would do that, just turn them loose. If they felt sympathy for the camels, never found any of this out.
Maybe a number of the guys that had worked with them just really disliked them. I mean, I've heard tales, you know, accounts of, especially from people, again, like Westerners who spent time in the Middle East, who felt like camels were very disagreeable animals,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they just thought that they were just mean, spiteful, nasty critters. Of course, you know, we never got camel's side of the story. So, maybe some of these guys had similarly were prejudiced against the camels, decided, ha, this is my chance. Mm-hmm. I'll just kill this camel that's been so mean to me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So it's unclear why camel sightings were so very rare until 1883. But what I suspect, what many people suspect, is that the camels did survive.
Yeah.
A few of them, probably not a giant population. And they hid as far from people as they could get and avoided human contact at all costs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they became essentially the four-legged Bigfoot of the Southwest.
Kind of, yeah. I think they were out there maybe on the Mexico side of the border just trying to stay where they didn't have to encounter people.
And luckily for them, that was a fairly empty area back in those days.
Especially at that time, yeah.
Yeah.
And you can't help but wonder if maybe the addition of this dead rider drove the camel that became known as the Red Ghost into, you know, risky behaviors just out of sheer agitation from having this thing strapped to it.
Yeah, that would sure bother the camel. It would bother most anybody, don't you think?
Yeah. Now, one thing to remember is that even though these things are separated by only about 20 years, the population of Arizona had boomed because of train travel.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, this memory of these men, the Camel Corps in the 1850s or whatever, kind of became a distant memory.
Yeah.
Right? They didn't know when people who were living there, especially people who were new to the area, didn't really know about the Camel Corps.
And that's entirely understandable. So, and of course, the camels themselves were gone. The ones that were out there mm-hmm. were hiding. So, yeah, yep. You got to understand why everybody would forget about the existence of these camels.
I think it's also important to note that, you know, pictures just in general were not as common as they are now. I bet a lot of these people didn't really totally know what a camel looked like.
Yeah, probably not.
But the question I have, Joe, is who was the dead rider?
Well, yeah, and how did he wind up strapped to a camel?
Yeah.
This is like, it's like that Nicolas Cage movie where he's, you know, catches fire and rides around on a motorcycle.
kind of, yeah, it's like Ghost Rider. It's true.
Ghost Rider. Yeah, it's just like that. It was a Ghost Rider.
Yeah. All right, so
or something. We're gonna,
but first, before we get into Ghost Rider of the camel variety, we're going to talk about Contactee.
Oh,
my movie. That's my movie.
Contactee, the Oscar-winning film. swept not only the Oscars, but the Golden Globes.
Yeah, if they still have those. So look, you guys probably tune in week over week. I'm going to make this quick, but if you haven't already, please go on to Amazon Prime and check out my science fiction thriller film, Contactee. It's streaming. If you have a Prime membership, it's included with that. Tell a friend, give us a good rating. That's how we keep this podcast going. It would mean the world to me if you'd go on Amazon or IMDb or Letterboxd and say something nice about it. And if you haven't checked it out yet, please do. It's really good. And if you're in a place where Amazon won't let you see it, get in touch with us. We have all our contact information. I'll make sure you can see it. Mm-hmm. And I'd love you to. So
yeah, please do. Yeah, absolutely. Yep. It will change your life. I mean, it changed mine.
It's not overpromise, but it is a good movie.
Yeah, I think so too. But so see it.
See Contactee.
And we're back from our commercial break, and we're going to get into the theories. But before then, just a couple of quick fun facts. Mm-hmm. Number one, Haji Ali, aka High Jolly, lived out the rest of his life in Arizona and was actually a very well-liked figure. He was so well-liked, actually, that the residents put a small pyramid over his grave with a plaque honoring him. And it also included an effigy of a camel.
Yeah.
And I don't know exactly where his grave is. I assume that stuff is still there.
So, oh, it absolutely is. Yeah, you can visit it. It's, I forget, it's in a tiny little town in Arizona. Mm-hmm. And they have a bunch of actually really cool art of camels, including a sculpture made of car parts that depicts the red ghost.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I love it.
I'll try to put something on social media, but yeah, it's I can't remember the name of the town, but it's in this area around Eagle Creek.
Although if you really wanted to do it right, you know, then make it extra special creepy, you'd instead make it out of like bones. Make a sculpture out of bones.
The thing that they made kind of looks like a strange version of the cigarette logo.
Oh, really?
But it's there. It's cool.
I'd love to go see that. Next time I'm on a road trip in the Southwest, I'll definitely put it on my itinerary.
Yeah. Actually really cool.
Yeah. Okay.
And then the other fact I wanted to talk about that I thought was interesting, just a little bit of flotsam related to the story, trivia. Australia tried a similar project. And unlike the Americans, they were successful. They were too successful. Yeah. They still have large and destructive feral camel populations whose numbers have to be maintained by hunters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, it looks like they treated their camels a little better. If they, you know, they've got a whole huge population. All of ours, unfortunately, just died off eventually.
Yeah. I guess the other fact I can throw in there is that I was able to find credible sightings of camels in the Southwest around the area. Arizona-Mexico border up until the early 1950s.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They don't seem to be there anymore, but it does seem like they did have a feral camel population that was thriving there for like almost 100 years. That's kind of cool.
Yeah, it is. It's probably a good thing they didn't really take off, because obviously they're not a native species. It probably would have been destructive to, you know, have thousands of camels roaming around the Southwest.
You'd have to think.
Yeah, but then, you know, at the same time, you know, the population of animals basically dies out and goes extinct. That makes me feel kind of sad. So, you know, it's a happy, sad situation. But
yeah, it'd be cool if it was somewhere in the middle, if we had a controlled native feral camel population.
Yeah, that'd be kind of cool.
All right, so let's discuss the writer.
Let's talk about our theories here. Yeah, so our writer. So, yeah, so that's our question. Who was the dead man that was strapped to the camel's back?
Yeah.
There was clear evidence of rawhide straps on the camel's back. And there were multiple witness accounts that saw the zombie riding the camel.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, there were those guys who not only saw the zombie, they recovered the zombie's skull after they took a pot shot at the camel.
Yeah.
So this is well documented that there was indeed a dead body strapped to this poor camel.
Yeah, unfortunately, the skull has been lost, but it was in the possession of county officials at some point.
Probably at some point, somebody just decided to give it a good burial, or either that or they threw it in the dumpster. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. So we got several theories that are out there. Theory number one is that it was a soldier, one of the Camel Corps soldiers. So the premise of this is that a rider, a reluctant rider, obviously, was strapped to his camel by his superior officers in the Camel Corps as some sort of punishment. But the camel took off and just ran away with this poor guy strapped to his back, unable to free himself.
Oh, this poor dude.
They weren't able to catch up with the camel themselves. They couldn't. They lost his trail. And unfortunately, you know, whoever was strapped to his back eventually died of thirst, of course, or something, you know, and winds up riding around rotting on the back of this camel for years and years.
What a fate.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm buying this one or not. What do you think?
The problem that I have is that the Camel Corps used very specific gear to ride and load up their camels with, you know, weight, with freight.
Yeah.
And none of that was ever found.
Something like saddles with stirrups and everything.
Yeah, essentially. Yeah. I have pictures we'll share on our social media, but
yeah,
none of that was ever found. It was just a guy tied to a camel. So
with rawhide straps. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So what would have happened to all the rest of the stuff? 1883, it's hard to imagine there'd still be much left.
Would there really be that much stuck to the poor camel?
Yeah, exactly.
You wouldn't think so. No.
I'm not really an expert on what happens to a body strapped to a camel in the Arizona desert. Yeah. Maybe it would mummify and hold up really well, but I got a feeling it would fall apart.
Well, and you'd think that the rawhide straps would eventually kind of rot and break.
Yeah.
You know, there's
17 years or whatever is a long time.
I have sort of a theory that's similar to this, which is that maybe the Apache did it. Mm-hmm. Perhaps, like, for example, if they had come across, like, say, and this was Apache country, of course. And so maybe they came across some camel and they snagged it, which, you know, they were pretty skilled with horses. They probably, if enough of them got together and lassoed his its hind feet and its neck and everything else. They probably could have gotten it under control. And then they were like, well, what the hell are we going to do with this thing? You know? and it's just like, but at the same time, it's like, oh, you got this guy here and it could have been a white person or another Indian. I mean, the Indians didn't actually discriminate in terms of, you know, they were as brutal to one another as they were to the white settlers. And of course, some of them weren't actually that brutal too. I mean, cultures vary quite a lot. But they could have done a similar thing to the soldier theory. They could have strapped somebody to this camel as either punishment to him or as a maybe strap a dead body to the camel as a message to someone else. Mm-hmm. And so, like, say, for example, the camel, they know what little they know about these camels is that the army brought them in. Mm-hmm. And so they figured they caught a soldier and they tortured him to death and then strapped it to the back of the camel and give the camel a slap on the butt, figuring that the camel, you know, like a horse, would eventually mosey back home with the dead body and a message on its back. Mm-hmm. Of course, what they didn't realize is the camel didn't want to go anywhere near its so-called home. You know, the camel was not about to go home. And so the message never got delivered. Instead, the camel just rides around the desert for years.
Poor thing.
Yeah. Yeah. The poor camel. I really feel sorry for this poor camel.
Yeah. It had a hard lot.
So anyway, the whole Apache thing is like, that's, again, sheer speculation.
Yeah. All of these are. I mean, nobody knows how it got a dead man strapped to its back.
It could have been also a case of somebody who really hated that particular camel and wanted to punish the camel. Maybe it wasn't even a question of punishing
that's an interesting
human being,
thought,
you know, I mean. Yeah, but anyway, I feel bad for the camel.
The second theory that I read, this is not one of my own, but I read this. It's the desperate bid for survival theory.
Yeah.
So imagine this, Joe. You're lost in the desert and you're dying of thirst and you find a camel just wandering around out there. And somehow you get the drop on it and you tie yourself to it in, you know, this hope that it will lead you to water or civilization or something.
Yeah, you know, actually camels are noted, from what I have heard, at being able to smell water from a long distance.
Yeah. I mean, well, it's an animal and it lives out there. It must know like where water is, otherwise it would die.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And if you can live out there, then you know, that means you know where the water source is. Mm-hmm. But you, the rider, you've underestimated how long a camel can go without water.
That's true, because humans can only go without water for what, maybe 3 days?
In the Arizona sun, it may not be even that long.
Yeah, good point.
Now you've died and you're stuck to this poor beast. And and that addresses one of the other mysteries, is nobody knows why the red ghost, your camels live in herds. We don't know if it had a herd, if there was that substantial population, but it was not around other camels and it was rampaging through human settlements. So I don't have another theory for why it would do that other than that it was agitated by this dead guy. But
and it could have been agitated. It could have been actually a sort of cast out from its little herd because the other camels were grossed out by this rotting corpse on his back.
That's true. Yeah. I mean, I don't want him around.
Yeah. Maybe the animals actually kind of just, you know, the other animals didn't want anything to do with this thing. Probably smelled bad for one thing.
That's true. No, it's a good point.
Yeah. And it might have been this guy comes across the camel and the camel recognizes that this guy is actually in a bad way and allows this guy to climb on board, you know, to help
maybe. I don't really think so.
Kind of depends on by this time I would think the camels of southwest U.S. would have been pretty well alienated from human beings.
There's no other reports of camels having positive interactions with people when they saw them down there. They tend to want to be very reclusive.
So anyway, that is kind of an unlikely theory, but you know, whoever came up with the theory though, what the hell?
Well, yeah. So theory number three.
Yeah.
This is one of my own, but basically it goes like this. Someone was attempting to tame a wild camel. And they didn't really know what they were doing.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe they thought that tying themselves to the camel was an attempt to get the camel used to being ridden.
Yeah. Well, maybe they thought that too, that the camel could be broken like a horse.
Yeah,
The problem is staying on board that camel, you know? And so I'll tie myself to the camel so he can't buck me off. And I'll just stay on here. And eventually, you know, he'll get the message that he's broken and, you know, and I'm his master, right?
Yeah,
that work out
really,
for you, dude. Yeah.
Right? It's really dumb, but the outcome might be a lot like what we know eventually happened.
Yeah. Yeah. And so the guy doesn't work out the way the guy thinks. And The camel's like, yeah, whatever, dude. I'm not going to buck you off. Obviously, I can't do that. I'm just going to wander around until you die. You know.
Well, I think that also might explain some of the red ghost's behavior. Mm-hmm. It seemed to be in wooded areas and high brush areas.
Yeah.
And I don't know a lot about camels, but I think they like the open territory better.
Do you think maybe he wanted those areas to try to brush the body off of them?
That's what I was wondering. That's maybe. If you have brush and if you have trees and territory like that, a lot of these were around rivers and stuff. You need water for those. And that's where people are going to congregate. And that may explain why he made so much contact with people as opposed to the other camels mm-hmm. that presumably were somewhere in this region at the time hiding out in the desert.
Mm.
But there's a problem with theories 2 and 3.
Yeah, well, yeah, it's that. How do you get up onto a camel and tie yourself to it without the camel agreeing to it, right?
Right. So it was described as being large even for a camel. So this is an animal that's probably up at like 2,000 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
They are very big and very powerful. They can remove your limbs with their teeth. They can stomp through every bone in your body easily. How do you subdue one and get on it? I don't know how you do that.
I don't know. Yeah, here's a question. I mean, if the red ghost had met a grizzly bear and they battled it out, who would win?
I have no idea.
I don't either, you know. Yeah, I mean, these things are... So anyway, I don't know. This is, it does make it hard to believe that some rando just managed to strap himself to a camel.
Yeah, it seems like a neat explanation that for some reason somebody saw a camel and was like, I'm just going to tie myself up there.
Yeah,
that's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah, that's why I'm more inclined to think that somebody tied a corpse to the camel or tied a live human being to the camel. So somebody... Mm-hmm. Somebody like either in the camel corps that had some skills in handling them in terms of, you know, subduing them, mm-hmm. or perhaps again, the Apache were pretty skilled with horses and, you know, so they probably knew how to lasso this thing and sort of get it under control. Just need enough ropes and enough guys. It would probably take a lot of people to get this thing under control, but they probably could have done it.
I really liked theory number two.
Yeah.
When I was first researching this, right? There's some, you know, prospector out there and he's like, this thing, it's got to know where water is somewhere. I'm going to tie myself to it. I just don't know that he could do it.
Yeah.
I think I'm probably taking a bunch of guys. So the theory that it was like, like the Apaches or a group of ranchers for that matter, I don't know why they would do this, but it took multiple people and they somehow were able to subdue the animal and then for some reason tie a guy up there.
Yeah.
But the body was never identified. We have no idea who it is.
Yeah, let's take another theory here, which is that some crusty old prospector was out there and he actually runs across a camel and befriends the camel. Okay. So he's like Grizzly Adams, except it's like Camel Adams, right?
Okay.
And so he befriends this critter and they hang out for a while. And then for some reason he finds, say he's injured, wounded, whatever, and realizes he's got to ride his camel to help, but he's not going to stay in the saddle by himself. So he straps himself on, but, you know, unfortunately he doesn't make it. And the poor camel is stuck with his former buddy's corpse on his back. So that's, you know, again, completely random speculation. And who the hell?
Yeah. It's as valid probably as any of the other theories. It's just hard to say how this guy got on this camel.
Well, that's what I'm thinking. If it had been some dude who had befriended a camel and sort of, you know, gotten the camel to trust him enough to let him climb on board or something like that. That's maybe.
We could do this. I think we should wrap it up because we could do this all day. Nobody ever identified the body. There was no one that went missing. It's been speculated it might have been someone from Mexico. It's your guess is as good as mine. So I think we should probably wrap this one up.
We're just going to annoy people with any further speculation, frankly. Anyway, I just wanted to say, even though I already said it, I feel really bad for these camels, especially the camel that wound up spending possibly years with a corpse strapped to it. I feel really bad for that animal.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
Yeah.
So whoever did strap that corpse, I'm sorry, but you're a D-bag, dude. Whoever you are or were.
Yep.
Yes, you are. So anyway, I guess that's about it for this week. So tune in next week, of course, for some further high quality speculation about all kinds of things. And of course, if you are listening to us, please leave us a review and a rating. That's really helpful to us. And it's helpful to all these other people out there who have not yet found our podcast. It'll help them find us. So you want to help them out, right? And what else? Okay, we got Tess coming up here in just a moment with the.
She will give you our contact info so you can get in touch with us. Tell us what you think. I'm really interested to hear people's theories about what the who the dead writer was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, absolutely. I mean, maybe there's somebody from that neck of the woods down in Arizona who's, you know, heard some more detailed theories about this and actually has some information for us that we are not aware of.
That would be cool. Yeah. So get in touch if that's the case.
All right. And of course, if you are out there, if you're a camel, we'd like to hear from you too. So anyway, until next week, ciao.
The Shocking Details can be found at www.theshockingdetails.com. We're on Twitter at Shocking Details. For discussion of episodes and more, our Facebook group is facebook.com/groups/shockingdetailspodcast/. Or you can email us at theshockingdetailspodcast@gmail.com. And if you like the podcast, please consider giving us a like and a positive review and letting people know about us.
You know those popping phone handle things that you see on everyone's phones nowadays? Well, how would you like to put your logo on them? Does your podcast or band need new merch? Do you want to bring attention to your new book or film? Maybe you need something unique for your Patreon or crowdfunding campaign. Then visit thelogopop.com, where you can customize them with the logo of your podcast, band, business, art, school mascot, or whatever else you can think of. These are way more affordable than you may think at thelogopop.com. Mention where you heard this ad and get free shipping on your entire order. Remember, that's thelogopop.com to order your custom popping phone handles. That's thelogopop.com.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.